Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday. It's the 6th of June, 2024, the 80th anniversary of the Allied invasion of France. It's a day for solemn reflection. Tom, Ben Bueller Garcia, our buddy who hosts the American Warrior program here at noon on Saturday, posted something on Facebook a few minutes ago I wanted to share with my audience. The town of Bedford, Virginia, population 3,200, that's 3,200 souls in 1944, suffered the most per capita loss, Tom, of her sons of any community in the United States. 38 men from that community were at Normandy. They were at D-Day. They were part of Company A of the 116th Infantry Regiment.
What was the population?
3,200. 3,200. Well, get this. 19 of the 38, and they would become known as the Bedford Boys. 19 of the Bedford Boys were killed in the first few minutes of the D-Day invasion. Boy, if that doesn't get you thinking, I don't know what would, but it is certainly
a tough hit for a community.
Oh my goodness, hard to believe. It is Buckmaster in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, our radio station, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, also the place for all of our podcasts. And when we do our telephone interviews, and we'll be doing a couple today, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The first excessive heat warnings of the year have been issued for Tucson. There will be, I'm sure, many more. There were a bunch in 2023. Extreme heat can be deadly, but you can help to stay safe by taking some simple actions. And we're going to talk about what we can do to stay safe with Courtney Sloniker, who is the executive director of the American Red Cross chapter here in Tucson. Hey, Courtney, how are you?
Hey, Bill, I am so great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Always a pleasure. Let's talk about some of the folks who are at most at risk on days like this where we go up toward nearly 110 degrees.
Yeah, we're seeing our partners put out some extreme weather alerts. It's really important to pay attention to those alerts coming out. But people that are most at risk, some of our older adults, infants and children, people who are pregnant, certain people with disabilities or complex medical issues, folks that are working outside, the majority of their job is spent outside, folks that don't really have access to maybe air conditioning or their home really, or wherever they're living isn't able to be cooled off. Those are some of the folks that are experiencing some of the impacts of the extreme heat and are really most vulnerable to extreme heat illness, which could be, you could have stroke, a heat stroke or heat exhaustion. Both are very serious heat illnesses that need to be addressed.
You know, I think no matter how many years we have lived, folks have lived in this area, I don't think by and large, Courtney, we drink enough water. I know I don't, and I should be drinking more, but it is especially important on days like this.
Absolutely. You know, it's something that we're probably taught as little kids. I'm from Tucson, and, you know, some of us think, oh, we're used to the heat. But heat really, when you talk to some of the experts, the Pima County Health Department, our National Weather Service meteorologist, heat is a deadly and silent killer. So drinking plenty of water is one of the best ways to make sure that your body is able to handle the heat. You want to also try to avoid some of those yummy caffeinated drinks, right? The caffeinated and alcoholic drinks can dehydrate you. They're a diuretic. And so you want to maybe temper those, still enjoy that morning cup of coffee. I know I do, but you definitely want to make sure that you're drinking extra water during that summertime. And you want to drink it throughout the day as well. Don't just drink a bunch right in the morning and then you forget about drinking. So it's important to, you know, maybe make sure you're checking your urine color. We don't need to get into the specifics of that, but, check and make sure that urine is clear, light in color, just to make sure that you're hydrated. That's a great way for an individual to check their hydration. and hydration levels.
We do have, Courtney, some cooling centers, don't we, here in town?
Yes. So if you're looking for a place to cool off, the Pima County Health Department, I just want to give them a big shout out, as well as all the partners that are a part of the Heat Relief Network. You can go to Pima County's website, you can go to pima.gov on the front page. They talk about how to stay cool, and they have a whole extreme heat webpage there where you can find all of the cooling centers that are located around town. And again, just wanted to share the love with Pima County Health Department and all the cooling center partners. You can see over 30-plus cooling centers around town if you need to find a place to cool off. Some of the places accept pets. So if you're traveling with your pets, some of those places check pets. And you can look at the map on Pima County's website and see exactly what cooling center would meet your needs, which I think is just so cool that the community has come together to make sure that people aren't facing these extreme heat illnesses. It is a preventable death if we work together as a community to address the heat.
Yeah, that's great. The community coming together with these cooling centers. I think it's a terrific idea, Courtney, and I think it will save lives. Speaking of saving lives, we'd like to get an update from you on how blood donations are doing. So many of our friends who come here for our wonderful weather in the winter have now returned to their hometowns in the Midwest or the East. This can present problems for blood donations, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And our high schools and colleges are out on summer break, which also impacts the blood supply because they're wonderful collectors. So between our summer, our winter visitors and our students out on break, it definitely does impact the blood supply. And really, every summertime, we historically have seen shortages in the blood supply. Right now, we have a critical need for donors. We are maintaining our blood supply, but that can change in a matter of days. May and June, people are getting excited for that summer. They're excited to probably get out of town.
Mm-hmm.
But keep those blood drive appointments. May was Trauma Awareness Month. And it's just a good reminder that, one trauma patient, someone maybe involved in a car accident, could use up to 100 units of blood at one time.
Wow.
That's 100 different people rolling up their sleeve to save a life. And so I like to remind folks, a lot of times maybe we see a car accident, we see something tragic, right? And it motivates us to donate. At that moment, the blood that we donate, it's not going to be helping that patient. It's the blood on the shelf that's going to save a life. And so in order to ensure that, anytime a patient needs a blood product, it's the blood on the shelf that's going to save their lives, which means that it's all of us donors that are eligible that are donating regularly to maintain the blood supply. And I know I say that probably every time I join your show, mm-hmm. but it's those continuous ongoing donations that are really going to help, one, stabilize the blood supply, and two, diversify it. That's another big piece. Different patients need different types of blood products, which is why we're calling on the whole community to see if you're eligible to donate and sign up and make an appointment. Truly, it's about an hour of your time, all said and done, from the moment you walk in the door to the moment you leave. And a lot of times it's shorter than that. If you complete our rapid pass online on the day of your donation, we can get you in and out of the door between 35 and 45 minutes. It's a very small inconvenience in your day to make a lifelong impact in someone else's life.
And how do we find out if we're eligible, Courtney Sloniker?
Yeah, great question. So for those, if you're not sure if you're eligible, maybe you lived in Europe in the 80s, a lot of the donor eligibility has been changing over the years. The FDA, which governs and all blood banks across the United States, constantly evaluates the donor eligibility criteria. And so a lot of folks that were indefinitely deferred, let's say they were living in Europe in the 80s, are now eligible to donate. So the best thing to do, you can go to redcrossblood.org. There's a great FAQ on there that gives you some general guidelines on if you're eligible to donate. Or if you're still not sure, you can give us a call, 1-800-RED-CROSS. You can talk to a person that specializes in blood donation, and they can check and see if you're eligible to donate. There used to be a lot of travel restrictions. There used to be restrictions if you recently got a tattoo. A lot of those things have changed over the years. So we just encourage people, give us a call, 1-800-RED-CROSS, or visit redcrossblood.org, and you can check and see if you're eligible.
Courtney, is the shelf life very limited with blood products?
That is a great question. So when you donate whole blood, it has about a 42-day shelf life. When you do a platelet donation, that donation usually takes a little bit longer. You're usually going to be with us for between an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours, but you can catch up on that Netflix series you've been missing. And platelets are only good for 5 days. They have an extremely short shelf life. So the reason why, you know, we constantly ask for platelet donors is, again, that 5-day shelf life. Keep in mind that the platelets have to be tested to make sure they're safe to transfuse. So that takes usually between 24 to 48 hours. So of that 5 days that platelets, their shelf life is good, 48 of those hours are spent in testing, which means we have about 3 days to get them distributed to hospital and get them to a patient. So we're asking folks that are eligible to donate platelets, please sign up regularly. You can donate platelets about every 7 days up to 24 times a year. And those are critical. And then when you think about some of the other components of your blood, like plasma, plasma can actually be frozen in a deep freeze up to a year. So the different components of your blood product have a different shelf life. So hopefully that lets folks know, you know, whole blood is about every 42, it's a shelf life of 42 days. Platelets is 5 days, plasma is a year. That's a continuous logistical cycle that we have to continually monitor to make sure that we're getting blood in, getting blood out to the hospitals so it's ready for a patient that needs it.
And many people know that my new theme is life can change in an instant, and we need to really, we need to support the American Red Cross and people who are in need, and things can happen when you're least expecting it. You could be in an automobile accident and that blood's going to save your life, Courtney.
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, Bill, is there's so many patients that don't think they're going to need a blood product until they do.
Yes.
And it's one of those sayings, you know, I heard a saying about bankruptcy. You know, it seems gradual and then it's all of a sudden. And with the blood supply, right, it's very similar. You're like, maybe you don't need blood products, but then all of a sudden you do. And it's our job as a community to make sure that blood is available for the patient when they need it and it's the right blood type. That's also extremely important that we're providing the right blood types, which requires an entire community to roll up their sleeve and donate the ones that are eligible. When you think about eligibility, only 30% of the population is eligible to donate. It's really not that big of a portion of the population. And of that 30% that are truly eligible to donate, only 3-10% actually regularly donate. So we're missing a huge portion of eligible donors, and we're asking you to consider making that special gift for someone. Like you said, Bill, you never know when someone's going to need it.
Before we say goodbye, again, your website.
Yes. If you go to redcrossblood.org or give us a call, 1-800-RED-CROSS, we'll get you signed up. If you have any questions about how to stay safe in the heat, you can also give us a call or visit our website. We're here to support you.
Thank you very much, Courtney Sloniker. Always a pleasure. Have a great day. Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks so much, Bill. Have a great day. Thanks for having us on.
All right. Courtney Sloniker from the American Red Cross. Coming up next on the Buckmaster Show, segment two of our Thursday program, former Parade Magazine science editor and renowned comet discoverer, Dr. David Levy, will be on our live line right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things ready for the summer heat. Yes, there are plants that actually enjoy the heat. I dare say thrive on our summer heat. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. David Levy is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, former science editor of Parade Magazine, and one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. Dr. Levy just celebrated a birthday, so a little bit of a belated happy birthday, David.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's really quite a birthday gift you gave me because we're starting early today, which meant that I had to go to sleep earlier last night. And I had to stop observing a little bit earlier, and then I had to redo everything, all my finances, and visit the bank, but here I am.
There you are. And the summer sky looks pretty good for observing, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. There are a number of comets around, and there's one called Shushan-Chun Atlas. That's not the bright one that we had last year, but it's another one also found by the same two groups that I looked at just the night before last, and it's just really very pretty. And there's also a comet that I have not seen yet, but I'm hoping to get it later, and that's Olbers, Comet Olbers, and I like to call it Olbers' paradoxical comet.
Olbers?
Because of Olbers' paradox, because he was the one that said that the night sky should be every point in the night sky to infinity should reveal a star, the surface of a star, and that means that the entire sky should be so bright that life would not be possible on the Earth. The paradox is that that's not true. And the solution to the paradox did not come until Hubble had his theory of the expanding universe, that light from the most distant galaxies has not reached us yet. And that's why the night sky is dark, Phil.
Oh, I learn something every day, and that's a pretty important thing to learn, why the night sky is dark. Sunspot activity has been at a very high level, correct?
Oh, boy, has it ever been. This is, you know, when you expect astronomers to know what they're talking about, and they predicted that this cycle of the sunspots would be the weakest, like the last one, we'd have very few sunspots. It turns out that this is by far the busiest sunspot cycle of my lifetime.
Really?
And we had Northern Lights last month, and we had that are related to the sunspots, and we had all kinds of things. And this has been an absolutely fabulous sunspot cycle. It's just reaching its maximum right about now.
We had actually Northern Lights here in Arizona, so that's pretty
Northern
amazing.
Northern Lights in Arizona.
Yeah.
And I've seen them a number of times. Mm. I saw them at Palomar Observatory while I was observing with the Shoemakers.
In Southern California, right.
In Southern California. And I went outside, and I saw them. They're beautiful rays. I went inside. I told Carolyn, and she rushed outside. And then Jean came down, and Jean is fussing. He says, "Oh, no, we can't lose our schedule." And Carolyn said, "Yes, we can. So come out here and enjoy the Northern Lights." And the three of us just stood there watching this beautiful, beautiful sight.
It's time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month on the Buckmaster Show.
And for the quote of the month, I'm going back to the sunspots.
Hmm.
You'd think that nobody would write about something as technical as sunspots as a poem, but Tennyson did. Tennyson was an amateur astronomer. He had his own telescope. He loved the night sky, and he even observed the sunspots. "And was the day of my delight, as pure and perfect as I say, the very source and fount of day is dashed with wandering isles of night." Not only did he define the sunspots in poetic terms, but he also described how they move across the sun, wandering isles of night. And I just wanted to share that with you today.
And as a birthday present, we've given you a little more time. We actually have about 4 more minutes with Dr. David Levy today. Dr. Levy, going back to the summer sky, what are some of the outstanding features that you enjoy and would like to share with our listeners?
Well, the fact that it's you don't have to put on heavy coats and mittens and everything to go outside, and it's really so pleasant out there, even late at night. The only thing is that we have something that begins with a C that happens occasionally called clouds. And they tend to come during the heat of the summer, and it looks like we're going to have some clouds tonight. But still, the comets in the southern sky, we have a possible exploding star coming later this summer. And once again, you can't trust the astronomers' predictions. It'll happen when it's happened. It's called T. Coronae Borealis.
Hmm.
It's also called the Blaze Star. And every 80 years, like clockwork, that star explodes.
What?
It's in the northern sky. It's in the constellation of the Crown, Corona Borealis. And the interesting thing is, since we have a couple of minutes, Leslie Pelter, in his magnificent book, Starlight Nights, talked about how this star goes into outburst every 80 years, and it shattered the symmetry of the Northern Crown. And in 1946, he was going out there, and he's trying to watch it, but he woke up that night about 3 in the morning, and he said, "Well, I don't feel so good today. I'm going to skip it tonight and go to sleep." And that was the night he missed the night of nights of T. Corona Borealis, because as it was restless in its sleep, it tore off the covers and rose. And where was he? Where was I? I was asleep. And he says now, at the end of that lovely story, he says that I still watch this lovely star every night, but it is now with a weary eye. there is no warmth between us anymore. And I think that's just a wonderful story of his. So I call it Leslie's Star.
Exploding star story. All right, David, did you do anything special for your birthday?
Yeah, I had a lovely dinner with my friend Beth and with the Rossiters, two close friends of me, mine, from the Adirondack Astronomy Retreat, which we have every summer. And we had a lovely dinner, and it was just a lot of fun. I've enjoyed the night sky all my life, and I'm still, as long as I'm in good health, I shall continue to enjoy it.
All right, David, before we let you go, Tom has a quick question. What happened to Betelgeuse? Is it going to explode?
Well, Betelgeuse is very different from T. Corona Borealis. It, when it explodes, it will not be a nova, it'll be a supernova. And when that happens, for a few months, that star will be visible in daylight.
Oh, my goodness. We'll look forward.
It will be like another sun in the sky.
Okay.
But that could be many, many years or decades or centuries before that happens.
Okay,
it
David.
Will happen.
David Levy, always a pleasure. We'll talk with you in July, early July. Thank you, David.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
All right. Take a break right here. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Coming up tomorrow, the fire chief will be with us for our Friday Focus interview. But up next, attorney Don Luce.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio when we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Always a pleasure to welcome to the program for his monthly visit. We try to bring in Attorney Don Luce on the first Thursday of the month, depending on holidays. So in July, actually, it will be the second Thursday. But anyway, Don Luce, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group. Beautiful office here in Tucson. They have a great office in Phoenix. Mr. Luce, our contributor, our legal contributor, and he is the author of two very popular books. If you have any curiosity about Arizona laws, his book, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, great, great resource. And very important, estate planning in Arizona. Don't put off your estate planning. It's just don't kick the can down in the road. Life can change in an instant, as I know all too well. So check out his book, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books in their second printing. Hey, Don, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill. Thanks.
So curious to hear what you're going to say about this border security measure that voters may be looking at on the November ballot. I just wonder how security of our border becomes a state function when we all know that's one of the things the federal government is charged with doing, securing a border.
Interestingly, the governor of the state of Arizona agrees with you.
Okay.
So let's back up for just a moment and talk about how something does get onto the ballot, because every election we see numerous measures on the ballot that voters are asked to vote upon. Medical marijuana was a good example. Medical marijuana was on the ballot several years ago, and it was passed by Arizona voters, and that's how it became law. Recreational marijuana, same thing. So the people of the state of Arizona can essentially petition to have things put on the ballot, as those marijuana initiatives were.
Those are what we would call voter-driven initiatives.
Exactly. There's a minimum number of signatures required, but if you meet the minimum and a court doesn't knock it off, it goes to the voters in November.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature can refer matters to the ballot, and those are legislative referred initiatives. And that's what we're talking about with regard to border security. So you and I have spoken on numerous past occasions about the fact that the legislature in Arizona is Republican controlled, and we have a Democratic governor.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that our system is set up under the Arizona Constitution requires that the governor approve legislation sent to her by the legislature, or it doesn't become law unless, and this is the exception, the voters approve it. And then the voters can essentially, for lack of a better term, override the governor's disapproval of a particular measure or subject. In this case, the governor has expressed her disapproval of this security border law. And so I think the legislature knows that if it were to send this bill to the governor, it would never become law because the governor would refuse to assign it. So instead, the legislature has referred it to the voters in November for the voters to decide if it should become law. Now, there are several issues. One is a court going to allow this initiative to remain on the ballot? The Arizona Constitution requires that any new law or initiative be limited to a single subject, right? The opponents of this initiative say that it's a hodgepodge of different subjects, and because it contains different subjects, it doesn't meet the constitutional test of single subject, and therefore it should not be allowed to be put on the ballot. They also have another objection, and that is that the law doesn't state how it's going to be paid for. So the border security bill, which we should refer to probably as HCR 2060, it's House Concurrent Resolution 2060. So HCR 2060 essentially authorizes Arizona law enforcement officers to arrest on probable cause people who have entered the country other than at a port of entry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the supporters of the of HCR 2060 say, well, yeah, there's going to be a cost involved, you know, because we have to pay law enforcement and then we have incarceration and, you know, those related expenses. They figure that that's going to be about $57 million a year. Sorry, first 6 months. But they say the money that will be saved by not having illegal immigration in Arizona is several billion dollars. So therefore, the savings are going to more than cover the cost of enforcement. So under this proposal, which passed by party line vote this week, law enforcement officers, sheriffs, and other state officers, if they have probable cause to believe that someone has crossed the border other than a port of entry, then they will have authority to make an arrest based on that probable cause. The bill also has other things, though, and this is what I alluded to earlier when I mentioned that a law has to be limited to a single subject. The other things that it has in it, and this is kind of... I think this is a vulnerability for the proponents of the proposal because I'm struggling to figure out how this relates to border security. There are enhanced penalties for those who provide fentanyl that ends up causing death, among other things. So the single subject requirement, I think, is going to be hard to meet because now we have a bill that talks about border security, the ability to arrest based on probable cause, enhanced penalties for fentanyl that causes death, and there are also requirements for governments to verify the legal status of those who seek public benefits. That does seem a little bit like a hodgepodge.
Yes, it does. And what about the basics of can a state deal with illegal immigration? Isn't that a federal role?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Texas, has blocked implementation of a similar law in Texas, saying that they're going to wait to see what the impact of that law is on federal law under the doctrine of preemption. So in other words, if the federal government is charged with, in this case, enforcing border security, then a state cannot similarly enact a statute covering an area that the federal government already has charge of. And so the Fifth Circuit has blocked the implementation of the Texas law. If that Texas law does end up being constitutional, and that's a big if, then and if the Arizona proposal, HCR 2060, ends up on the ballot, and that's a big if, then HCR 2060 will become law in Arizona. But as you can see, there are a lot of hurdles that have to be overcome in order for this law to actually take effect.
And what would, this is a great question from a listener, what would probably cause, I mean, skin color, I mean, racial profiles got to come into this. What would be probable cause to stop somebody?
Well, I suppose if the law enforcement officer witnessed the person actually crossing the border at other than a port of entry, that would be probable cause. I'm not sure how probable cause would be developed absent somebody actually seeing the person cross, however. So, I understand that there is concern about law enforcement discrimination.
Yes.
But the standard isn't reasonable suspicion, which is a lower standard. Hmm. It's probable cause, which is a higher standard. And it may actually require something akin to actually seeing the incident occur.
Mm-hmm. All right. Actually, we're up against the break, but I do want to mention that a judge ruled just yesterday that Governor Hobbs acted illegally in naming 13 individuals as deputy directors to run the state agencies after the Senate would not confirm her picks. And that, so there are a lot of agencies up in Phoenix that do not have directors.
13.
So you got a baker's dozen that don't. But now a judge in Superior Court says that it's kind of that Hobbs, maybe this is not the way to go.
Well, I'll be happy to discuss that briefly after the break.
Why don't we take the break, and then we'll have more with Don Luce right after. Let's take this call real quickly. Robert has a quick question for Don Luce on this subject. Go ahead, Don. I mean, Robert, excuse me.
Don, even if there was money, who would be available to pick these people up? Where would they go? And they would just be bonded out instantly with no bail, which is what they do when you cross at a crossing.
And that's one of the many, many, many problems with state enforcement of border security. It's, in my opinion, a federal issue. Texas had tried to enact a statute similar to the one that's being proposed here in Arizona. The Circuit Court of Appeals has blocked it. I think we're going to have similar issues with regard to HCR 2060.
All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Don Luce after the break on the Buckmaster Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk about our great sponsor over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, and it's always easy to talk about them this time of year because Silver City is at like a mile high, 5,000 to 6,000 feet, somewhere in there. So what does that mean? Well, it means it's cooler. Over in Silver City, we like to say usually it's going to be about 10 degrees cooler. So if we go up to, I don't know, pushing toward 110, and if they're in the mid-90s, that's pretty cool, considering. 3-hour drive east of Tucson, not bad at all. SouthwestNewMexico.org, the great starting place for a visit to our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Our friend Don Luce is here, attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. And Don, before the break, we were talking about the governor trying to get her picks to run state agencies, to get them on board to actually run the state agencies, but now this has been tied up in the courts.
Right. So our system requires that the Senate confirm the governor's choices. So we have multiple state agencies, as everyone knows. We have the Department of Revenue, we have the Department of Transportation, et cetera, et cetera. The incoming governor, in this case, Governor Hobbs, nominates individuals to serve as the directors right. of those agencies. Mm-hmm. And a director of an agency has a tremendous amount of authority, not the least of which is to promulgate or initiate the promulgation of rules that essentially have the effect of law with regard to the agency's functions. Mm-hmm. So if you're a director of a state agency, you're a pretty powerful person.
Like the Department of Health.
I mean, exactly.
These are very exactly. important.
That's a really good example, yeah. by the way. So the problem that Governor Hobbs had was getting the Senate to confirm her nominations. She sent a slate of nominees to the Senate for confirmation. The Senate confirmed some, but left 13 agencies without a director.
Yep.
The Senate refused to confirm 13 nominations that the governor had made. Mm-hmm. Well, that's problematic. Now, here's where it gets interesting, in my view. The governor, realizing that her nominations were not going to be confirmed, and not wanting to select another nominee.
She tried a workaround, right?
She did. She tried a workaround. Much like the reverse of what the legislature is doing with regard to HCR 2060, which we talked about before mm-hmm. the break. Mm-hmm. They know that they can't get Governor Hobbs to sign that bill, so they're trying to get it on the mm-hmm. ballot mm-hmm. as a workaround. Mm-hmm. Well, with regard to the directorships, the governor is doing something similar by way of trying to get something done without having to deal with the legislature. So in this case, what she did was she appointed her director of operations, a guy by the name of Ben Henderson, which is a non-confirmed position, to temporarily head an agency, one mm-hmm. of these 13 agencies. Mm-hmm. So Henderson then named Hobbs's nominee as executive deputy director. Okay.
Okay.
So the nominee is now deputy director, and then Henderson quits, meaning that the deputy director is yes. then in charge of the agency.
Yep. Yep.
So the yeah. So anyway, the Maricopa County Superior Court judge who heard the case. He wasn't going for any of this. What he said was, and I like to read these quotes sometimes. The judge said the governor took those actions for an improper purpose, culminating in an improper result, one that violates Arizona law. Here, the governor willfully circumvented that statutory process and eliminated the legislative branch from its executive role. Those are pretty powerful words directed to a sitting governor. So that, what some people have called a scheme, that's not going to work. So we still have the problem of 13 state agencies
without a director.
Without a director.
So who's running the show?
Good question. The judge wants the parties to get together and see if they can come up with a solution. If not, the governor has announced her intention to appeal the decision. But quite frankly, having reviewed the underlying facts, I think the decision is a sound one legally, and I would be surprised if the governor were successful in appealing it.
I always like to talk about the, some of the big legal verdicts that came down in the previous year, and we now know about 2023. The biggest one was a whopper, wasn't it? Over 31.5 approximately million.
Right.
Yeah.
It was...
I guess the top 10's heavy with, as you might expect, malpractice cases.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the top verdict was over 31 million. It was the largest medical malpractice verdict in Arizona's history. Unfortunately, all of these cases involve very sad facts. People who have been seriously, in most cases, permanently affected. So this number one 2023 verdict in Arizona came out of Maricopa County. And it was brought by a woman individually and on behalf of her minor son. Against a hospital and against one of its physicians. The woman claimed that the hospital and the doctor were negligent in the labor and delivery of her son, resulting in her son sustaining a brain injury due to oxygen deprivation. She argued that the defendants administered a medication that worsens the effects of oxygen deprivation against hospital policy. Now, there is an interesting... trial aspect to this, and that is the hospital admitted to losing critical fetal heart monitoring medical records and then argued that it would be impossible for the plaintiff, the mother, to prove the case without these records.
Oh.
So, okay, so here are the facts.
Oh, boy.
The hospital lost the records
and
is now arguing that the mother cannot prove her case without them.
That is so.
So the mother's attorneys argued the opposite, that these missing records shrouded the defense testimony in uncertainty.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a three-week trial. The jury awarded $31,550,000 in damages. Largest medical malpractice verdict in Arizona's history. Hmm. We saw last year a really large verdict as well in a case where the defendant had engaged in conduct that I think the jury found very, very offensive. And as a result of that, awarded a very large amount, including punitive damages against the defendant. I would submit, and I don't know more about the case than what I've just told you, but I would submit that in any case where a defendant loses key medical records,
a hospital is supposed to keep the records,
and then argues that prevents the mother from maintaining her lawsuit, is opening itself up for a larger
award. The logic on that.
Well, okay. So let's talk generally about last year's verdicts.
Yeah, real quickly, Don.
Okay. The plaintiffs, in other words, the people bringing the lawsuits, won... What percent of the time, Bill? More than half?
60% of the time.
Man, you are good. 59% of the time.
There you go.
Defense verdicts, 41%. Historically, the plaintiff has a 48 to 63% chance of winning, and the others are defense verdicts.
Mm-hmm.
33% of the verdicts in 2023 followed a bench trial. 7% of the verdicts were rendered by jury. So the notion that everything is a jury trial, throw that out the window, because about a third of them are tried to the court.
There you go. Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group offices here in Tucson and Phoenix. Thanks, Don. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Bill.
On behalf of Mr. Luce and Tom, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope everybody has a great day.